Okay, everybody please, if you are staying for the second part of the power management and energy awareness session, please take your seats. If not, please go to the other rooms or the hallway. We are going to start the next part right now. Or maybe when the speaker is ready. Okay, so Mike. Yeah, it works. Or at least it worked for three of us, so.
Thank you.
All right, I don't have slides, I have GitHub. So the purpose of this talk is just to introduce a tool that a couple of people in the room already know about and just discuss why the tool was created and to see if there's any interest or in anyone else using it and maybe a collaborative opportunity. So Belieb worked in close collaboration with Renesas to develop basically a user space daemon that can help out with the situation where you have a big little RMSOC, big cluster, little cluster, and perhaps it's running an older kernel and it's a non-Android OS. So you don't have, you can't go to the Android tree and pull down all the nice energy aware scheduling and the SCEDTUNE integration. So in fact, the use cases here is it's for automotive focused IVI platform. Non-Android, like I said. And the kernel's also a little bit older, so it won't have all the latest stuff that's been going on in the scheduler space. So for this tool, you can see, sort of some of the config options. Oh, it's kind of small. Can you guys read that?
Yeah.
All right. There you go, a little bit better. So the tool is very simple. We're talking about 800 lines of code. It's all in user space. Uses the CPU affinity. To assign tasks at runtime. And so, in fact, if you're familiar with the way that the CPU freak on demand algorithm works, it's somehow quite similar. The system integrator can specify up thresholds and down thresholds for migrating tasks based on their average load to the big CPU cluster or the small CPU cluster. And you can also create whitelists. So if you know there's certain tasks that you prefer to have as background tasks on the small CPUs, or if there's very interactive and high performance user-facing tasks such as web browsing, which is one of the main things we were interested in, then we can permanently apply those to the large CPUs. What's interesting for the purpose of this discussion is that for this particular set of use cases and constraints, we're performance-oriented. We're not really trying to save energy per se. There's a little bit of thermal constraint, but there's also active cooling potentially in the system, so thermal is maybe not the biggest thing. And so, in fact, an energy model per se doesn't even make as much sense here. It's really about how do we just make sure that we're getting the best performance for the use cases that the system integrator cares about. So now's a good time for me to say that this solution, which is on GitHub, it's not trying to compete with the upstream efforts for the energy aware scheduling or anything like that. It's really focused on older kernels that don't have EAS yet, or for non-Android systems where that level of integration doesn't quite reach parity with what's been done in the Android space. So let me just look at my notes real quick. I'm also not the author, so please don't ask any piercing technical questions, because I'll just make something up. I don't know. We use CPU affinity here, which is kind of interesting. We originally wrote a tool which would do recommendations and create C groups for each cluster, and the recommendation engine we got feedback that, well, if we can do recommendation engine for system integrators to whitelist tasks into different clusters, could we do that at runtime? Could we dynamically migrate tasks back and forth? So the answer is yes, and so maybe some of the things that are coming up for the next version of this tool would be to migrate it to use C groups, which is somehow a little bit similar with some of the methods that SCEDTUNE uses under the hood. So whether or not there's a collaborative opportunity with the SCEDTUNE work is interesting. And as well, just for folks that are using it with a Yocto-based system or something like that, we also might kind of systemd-ify the daemon a little bit, so it makes it a little bit easier in case it gets killed off to restart. And in general, we're trying to figure out as well for more advanced systems as well that are not just big and little, but maybe even more combinations than that, if this tool makes sense, if it scales up for those types of use cases. So, a couple of times earlier today, go ahead, is there a question?
I see you're using the debug interface.
Yes.
I do not consider this to be an ABI, and I will randomly break this for you.
It's the production grade debug interface. So. Yeah, that's true. So I guess an interesting point would be, could we get the signals that we need out of a stable interface? Okay.
What do you need? There might be another small problem with the real-time and deadline task, because they get initialized when they get created, and you can get their shed proc file. But the last update time value never changed, and I think this breaks the tool a little bit. I'm not saying that real-time and deadline is better supported in the kernel, but that might be a small issue for the tool to handle those tasks.
Okay, yeah, that's good feedback.
And another thing is, since you work with task affinity, what happens if you have n CPUs and you have n plus one big task? The tool probably puts all of those big tasks onto the big side and essentially creates more latency. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to know your workload well to say we just consider n big tasks.
Right, and actually I think for users of this tool, knowing their workload well is kind of an assumption. So like I said, the tool originally came out of a recommendation engine to statically assign tasks, right? And so that's still our operating assumption, is that the system designers and the system integrators will statically assign the tasks they care about the most. But we also want to have that dynamic behavior for tasks that maybe weren't considered but can grow large or may not remain large over time. So that's also good feedback. I wonder if migrating to the C groups approach, where we have a C group that represents an entire cluster, would help with the affinity plus one situation that you just mentioned. So having like a slightly less granular way of grouping up the tasks. So the code's actually very simple. Like I said, it's 800 lines. I think a quarter of it's just parsing options at the command line. I'm curious if there's anyone in the room raising hands that would is interested in taking a look at this, or if this maybe solves a problem for big little systems that are not based on Android for them, that I encourage you to go take a look at it. So I think we have a question back here.
I was just going to say that for me, it's not so much big little, but more big server perspective interesting. If nothing else, just as food for thought.
Right. So earlier, the process differentiation angle came up. So I guess maybe you're considering something like that, where you have performance differences between the CPUs on the server?
Not so much between CPUs on the server, but more between classes of processes from the user space side that I know about and I care about differentiating that way.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's quite an easy tool to use, so you could experiment with it for sure to see if it helps with some of your workloads.
So from the debug interface, you pull only the load average parameter or anything else?
You're asking if there's other signals besides this one in the debug interface?
No, I'm saying what all the signals do you fetch from the debug interface?
Oh, primarily we're using the per task average load.
So can we get that using eBPF or any other tool for the production interface you mentioned? So eBPF with the eBPF script, we can get that information with the from the structure directly. So can we do that?
Sorry, there's just a bit of echo, so I'm having a hard time understanding.
He's suggesting a more stable interface, eBPF.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's good. Yeah, thanks for the feedback then. Yeah, that's.
Good catch. Hey, Mike. Terrible catch. I missed the initial part of it. Is there any reason you would want this in user space? And can we achieve the same effects by trying to use the util estimate that Patrick is talking about combined with the clamping? Will that give you the same benefit? Because he's keeping the average pelt load over some time frame, right? So basically, it looks like you're saying use it also for task placement, not just for frequency, not just for driving the frequency, but also to drive the task placement. Does that seem?
Well, so I guess a lot of the same constraints that one would have using an in-kernel solution would be similar here. Like, I don't know if this is addressing your point, but for instance, we're using regular old CPU freak for CPU frequency scaling, so it's uncoordinated with the task placement choices here. And as well, I mean, the ramp rate for the pelt signal will be, you know, the same. It's the same signal, right? So you'll still have all the same issues that were highlighted earlier in today's talk. I don't know if that's addressing your point exactly, but
I'm just trying to see if you, let's say Patrick stuff goes in, would that remove the need for this?
Oh, maybe, potentially. I think that Patrick, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that this is going to be much easier for a system designer, a system integrator to integrate, right? Besides getting some signals out through the debug interface, we have, like, there's no kernel patches here, right? It's super easy. We're not trying to bias signals that feed into the task assignment and task placement algorithms in the scheduler. We're just using a big hammer. We're just using Affinity, and maybe in the future C groups. So I think that from the ability to understand what's going on and the ability to integrate it quickly in a system, this one will be faster. We could potentially use the same interfaces as Patrick's work, and we discussed that briefly the other night. I'm not sure.
So one interesting use case for this could be to extend this for the thermal partitioning that Morten brought up first thing during the day. Because that's exactly what you wanted, right? A way to partition your thermal budget by sets of processes or based on use cases, right? So, I mean, he's got some way to partition it, and maybe a good way to experiment with that.
Right. I mean, it's very flexible in the sense that you're just putting together. So there's two parts, right? You have the whitelists for the different clusters, and you could use that potentially for anything, right? It doesn't have to be specifically focused on you know, our big little performance use cases. Could be for thermal mitigation, and then you have sort of the runtime assignment of tasks that aren't in the whitelist. And I think that it could be extended for a lot of different use cases. I mean, it's, you know, if you wanted to manage task placement for thermal in user space, and you had the signals necessary to do that, then yeah, this tool could very easily be extended for that. Yeah, I mean, in a way, it kind of reminds me of like the legacy IRQ balanced daemons that we used to have back in the day, right? So, and I expect it to be superseded by an in-kernel implementation at some point. But this is, I mean, essentially a stopgap solution for people that want to ship a product today on big little systems without Android. Cool. So I encourage you to check out the code. It's on GitHub. And thanks.
I have one question in that. This thread will be placed on the little core, on the big core. This thread itself.
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, you could assign actually the daemon to either cluster based on the whitelist, or you could let it be auto migrated based on the periodic pulling of the per task load. But yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I assume most of the system designers that we're working with would probably put it on a little core. I mean, it's a very, very low overhead kind of task. So, okay. Thanks.
So recently, when Dietmar posted the frequency invariant patches, it triggered a discussion about the issues or limitations we have on ARM platforms on the DVFS operations. Most of the ARM platforms have the external PMIC, which are run on very low speed I2C or SPI bus. So it's not possible to change the regulator in the scheduler context. So the current solution we have in the mainline, the schedule till governor puts a work on the in the threat context to do the job. So at the same time, we were like ARM was proposing a new firmware interface for newer systems where which has the embedded controller to drive most of these DVFS operations. So when this discussion started, I started experimenting, trying to use this interface and drive this in from the scheduler context. So far we have been experimenting, Yuri and others have been trying out this and we have not seen any issues. But one of the main feedback I need here is it's like fire and forget operation. So we say set this OPP. So it might happen in say some delay. So do we need that accuracy? Is like up to a millisecond delay in the change is fine, or do we need exact? Because that's something the solution lacks. So any feedback on that?
I was saying fire and forget is sufficient. I don't think you can do anything useful out of knowing the delay, other than if you're trying to keep track of an average frequency, it might have some impact.
Yeah, so you need some way to recover the effective frequency over.
Yeah. Yeah,
So Intel has the
APERF, MPERF.
Those.
Yeah, that's something I'm coming to. So currently we don't have, and I can say we have and we don't have. So we have in a way that it's not architected, and different people are coming up with different, including ARM processors. We have custom interface to access those counters. So until that gets architected, we have to deal with this variety of issues. So, and another thing is we don't have both these counters running at same clock rate. So that calculations, are they overhead or So that's another issue we have.
Where does Intel currently use the effective frequency, if you do? Is it inside the firmware or is it inside the kernel?
Where we set?
Use.
I have a patch. That. I implemented the scheduler scale hook because I wanted to play with Vincent's new scaling stuff
For the frequency
inversion stuff. So I made this work, but I've not really gotten around to playing because then Tejun and Joseph distracted me, and then other stuff happened, and you know how it goes.
It is used in a couple of places actually. The first one is Intel P-State. The second one is where is the scaling car freak interface that just returns the current freak to the user space, and I think that's it. Maybe
mostly tracing.
Yeah, okay. Tracing.
Because one question I had is, if you're going to talk about effective frequency, over what period of time is it, right?
So for the scheduler, the scheduler. For the invariant accounting, basically requests it every time we do a PELT update, which can be fairly frequent. But because reading these registers is stupid expensive, what I do in x86 is I read them at the tick, and then I store the value, and then I use that for the entire duration. So I only update on tick, which is the effective frequency of the last millisecond, which is...
Okay, right. I forgot your ticks are a millisecond. Our ticks are 10 milliseconds. One other point that came up, I think, in the mailing list on this topic was in terms of effective frequency. You're trying to make stuff frequency invariant. Is to use cycle counters. So in Intel, the cycle counters are pretty efficient to read, right?
No, this is APROC.
No, no, I know. I know what you're talking about. Different thing. I'm just asking a separate question. Because if it is pretty efficient to read, I think in ARM also we just switch to using cycle counters instead of trying to depend on effective frequency, because based on the tick, it's going to, the averaging you do is going to be like imperfect. Like using cycle counter gives you exactly what you need. So you should just go with that.
So you don't want to use the PMC for this, because then user space perf has less resources.
You can share it, right? Just make the perf framework more intelligent so that if somebody's asking the same cycle counter, just give it.
No, there are more problems with that. I've been experimenting using the PMU interface. So one, yeah, I have to basically tell that there is no PMU for the user space. So that's, yeah. And the second thing is most of the designs today, they don't stop counting or on WFI. So that's another problem. Yeah. And
I was going to get to that, okay.
Then you have to save and restore the values when you go so deeper.
Does the APERF continue counting across full idle? Right?
No.
So see, that's the
no,
issue,
means,
right? One second. Yeah. So if you're, I guess if it takes a millisecond, maybe it doesn't matter, but if you're going to idle, if you're going to average over a time period and your hardware can go into full idle, even APERF cycle count, nothing is going to count it. So trying to keep a notion of average frequency, it becomes really convoluted. Long story short, we have actually used the PMUs. We have made it work by using cycle counters. So it can be made to work. We haven't made it shareable. We haven't upstreamed the code, but we can. We don't want to hold it with ourselves. We are okay with upstreaming it. We just need to get to it. So you can make it work with PMU counters. We do have it working across the idle or hot plug. You just need to save and restore. It's not end of the world.
But if you're going to architect it,
no, obviously, if the architect it, that's even better, right? Like today, why do you lose the state? Don't lose the state.
Two special purpose counters that do what needs to be done.
Correct. In the meantime, exactly. No, I'm saying it's already cheap.
Yeah,
but I'm saying in the meantime, we can use the existing PMU cycle counters. It's not really hard to make it shareable. It's pretty easy. We have it. We already done it. So.
Yeah, but like if user space is using, then. I don't know how it interacts.
Okay. Yeah, so that's one thing. But long story short, is effective frequency, I really don't like the idea because it has this issue with going to idle. I don't think there's going to be any hardware that's going to continue counting across idle and because it's going to start wasting power.
Some of our counters count through idle.
Yeah. No, it depends on what idle. If you're talking about full-on power collapse, I don't think you would, right? Fully power collapsed? Okay, at least on ARM, we can't on mobile. Let me put it that
way. No, but that's not architected, so that's one of the things I asked, but it's not mandated.
You don't want to architect it that way either, then because you're going to keep something up when you can fully turn it off on a mobile device. You don't want that.
It is very low.
No.
Keeping something on is not the last bit on. We turn off a ton of stuff.
I mean to say is the existing PMU as is might not be useful because the behavior is not. Might not be same as
moving along.
That's pretty much
the point is. I'm asking. Let's move towards cycle counters. Maybe not right now, but let's. That's where we need to look at not effective frequency.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds reasonable. Yeah.
That's pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So with that, we are pretty much done with the CPU frequency. Related part and the scheduler related part, and now we are moving to device power management part. So I have a couple of slides, but they are mostly my notes. So I will display them, but they are for me, basically. So, recently we had some discussions on the mailing list regarding the system suspend resume framework for devices and the relationship between that and runtime PM, which let's just say is not perfect. So the problem here is that that we have a quite extended set of callbacks for device drivers for power management. Three of them are runtime PM related. There are several related to system suspend resume and hibernation. Ideally, and there are a lot of drivers that could actually only that could just use two callbacks, like suspend and resume for everything, and that is difficult. The reason why it is difficult is that if you have a middle layer, so generally the design of the PM core is such that you, when a PM core is on the top of stuff, I will try to make it readable, which might not be easy because this moves. We have PM core, which invokes some middle layer, which may be a PM domain or a bus type or something else. Let's just focus on the two middle layer, which has its own set of callbacks. And then there are drivers that whose callbacks are called by that middle layer. Okay. So if we want to reuse runtime PM callbacks for the driver, then it has to interact properly with the middle layer, which is not guaranteed. Because if we say, like I have in the slide, if the middle layer suspend callback called the runtime suspend from the driver, then the runtime suspend from the driver suddenly has to know the context it was called from, whether it was the suspend callback from the middle layer or it was the runtime suspend callback from the middle layer. So it, in principle, it doesn't know that, and it will have to figure out. So that is a problem. And we would like to solve it somehow so that drivers can just say, oh, I have these two callbacks, and please use them for both suspend resume of the system and runtime PM. Okay, so this is one problem. And there is another one which is sort of related, which is we would like to do a number of optimizations on systems, like say the device is runtime suspended when the system suspend starts, and it sometimes is beneficial to just keep the device suspended over system suspend resume, right? Or reverse, we sometimes do this by default. Some drivers may not want to do that. I'll get to that later. So there are optimizations that can be done per device or per driver, but the drivers have to let the PM core know that they want that optimization to happen. right? Because then it is not applicable to everybody. Okay, so there was a, or there is a mechanism that drivers sort of can use to reuse the runtime suspend resume callbacks for system suspend resume, but so we have wrappers around those, and the driver can point its suspend late and resume early, say, to those wrappers, and then magic happens, and then the runtime PM callbacks are reused. But that falls apart if the middle layer is non-trivial. The reason why it falls apart is because, for example, actually I wrote this in there, but I will just put it here into my diagram. So let's say that the PM core executes a suspend callback from the middle layer. Suspend. Or suspend. Suspend. Well, okay, let it be suspend. I don't want to write more on this. So suspend. That will then call the suspend callback from a driver. Okay, now if this is pointed to one of the wrappers, that will then call runtime suspend from the middle layer. Oops. Okay. And that will call runtime suspend from the driver. Okay. So now the problem is that these two things need not nest. So that they may be doing different things. Those things may not be playing well with each other, and so on and so on. So this falls apart in the case when the middle layer is non-trivial. So there needs to be a different way to solve this problem. Okay? Okay, and the proposal is, let's just introduce flags that drivers can use to tell the PM core what to do. And then the PM core will look at the flags and say, oh, this is set, so I will do this for this device. And right now I have ideas about, you know, four of them, but there are probably more. Like the first one will probably replaced by two flags, because we need to know when the runtime PM callbacks should be used, in which stage of system suspend resume. Also, there probably will need to be a flag for something like if my wake up settings do not match between system suspend resume and runtime PM, just presume the device. So this is the idea, like introduce flags for the PM core to do the right thing and make the PM core do it. And also the middle layers will have to understand those flags and handle them correctly. But this works around the issue with this chain of callbacks that may or may not work depending on the middle layer.
So Rafael, just a comment on that. So this is not just about this force suspend resume callbacks, because this is also about generic calls to runtime PM. So a PM runtime get, for example, will trigger the same
kind
of.
So this problem, is present in other places, generally speaking.
More or less, what you're saying is that in a driver's suspend callback, you cannot use runtime PM at all.
Yeah, this basically means that you can't invoke runtime PM from suspend callback of the same device whose driver was called to suspend it.
Yes. So my point there is that this is a behavior that has been accepted since the early, early days.
Yes, so you, I realized that, but this was a mistake.
It's going to be very, very difficult to correct that mistake. That's my
point. Well, yeah, it may be, yeah, it may be quite a bit of work. I agree. Yeah. Because, you know, we pretty much overlooked this situation.
I guess this is something that we have just accepted, that this is the... We are more or less doing kind of a layering violation that you had pointed out, but I guess we have accepted that this is the way we deal with it. And not until now,
so
when we actually penetrate the problem for real.
Actually, in fact, was like I was doing that in middle layers. So I was doing runtime resume, because this is what you can do in during system suspend resume anyway. In the middle layer suspend callbacks, which still is slightly, not nice, but at least then the middle layer just calls its own callback and without the driver suspend in between them. So this causes problems for middle layers that need to do any non-trivial stuff in their system suspend resume and also in their runtime PM callbacks. So we need to somehow get rid of this, this way or another. But that's in the long term. So I think that there should be a long term goal, like to fix this potential problem. Let's just say, in many cases, it's just a potential problem, but anyway. But short term, to make the make it possible to use runtime PM callbacks, not just callbacks, but it's runtime PM path entirely for system suspend resume, I would do something like this. Okay, so this is pretty much all I have. And now, any comments, like concerns, so on?
Can you give an example of one of the cases where the a little more complicated middle layer where the suspend and runtime suspend nest or can't actually happen?
I have two examples. One of them is the ACPI PM domain, which applies to several buses like, you know, platform, I2C, SPI, and so on, which basically is where this problem became apparent, let's just say. And the other one is PCI. PCI will not work with this scheme completely because it cannot be made work this way.
I understand the bus types where the problem is, because I don't work on those bus types, I don't know exactly where the complexity is, because one of the solutions would also be to make those calls actually nest properly, which is what we have to do at the driver level to implement this nesting. The drivers have to be aware
that they can
happen.
So the problem here is that the callbacks from, say, the ICPI PM domain has to figure. So this run, say, in order to make them nest properly, this one has to figure out the context it was called from, which basically is not possible. Because there are no additional arguments, it has to just know that I was called from this path or from that path. So that's basically, we have callbacks, or we have that many callbacks so that we know that the context the code was invoked from. Right. And this would mean that we are just throwing this away, because and that the callback itself has to figure out. So that would mean that redesign of the entire internals of the whole subsystem or the whole way we handle this. Right, so this is serious, I would say, right? Okay, so, yeah. Okay, no comments, so
I guess the default behavior will be to ask if nothing was said.
So the driver will have to use the set of flags it wants at probe time. Essentially, right. At probe time, will have to say that. Yeah.
Today, without this feature, I assume the behavior is always suspend, right?
I don't quite hear you clear enough. So, oh yeah.
Okay. So the behavior today, without any of the changes, would be to do always suspend, correct?
So the idea is to keep the current behavior of everything. So they say we.
If don't set the flags, it'll be the current behavior.
Yeah, if they don't set the flags, the PM core will do what it does today.
Okay.
And
from the names of the flags, that's not what it looked like, but yeah. Okay.
Okay. Cool. Well, those are just proposals. Like everything here is just an idea at this point. So I started to sort of looking at how much work it takes to implement this and update the middle layers and so on and so on. So it is doable. It is not a small task, but yeah, we can do that because there is not too many middle layers that have to be updated. And the benefit for drivers will be that they won't need to use. So the idea would be to just replace the boilerplate entirely with those flags. So the driver sets the flags and that's it, right? But yeah.
So those flags, let's imagine I have a driver which is working in two different systems, like Intel and ARM. Do I have at prop time, you say that this flag should be set at prop time, but do we have to know in which platform we are probing in order to set the right flag?
So in principle, I think it would be good if the same set of flags could be set always.
Okay. Yeah, that's
the idea at least.
Okay.
Alan? Say, give it to Alan. I like.
I wanted to point out that right now there's a tremendous number of callbacks. I mean, we've got for suspend three or four callbacks. And
yeah, we have. Very true.
And then for hibernation, we've got two sets of callbacks, each of which is the same number as system suspend.
Yeah.
And the reason for doing this was because Linus said, don't pass flags, use different callbacks.
Right.
And now here we're sort of getting tied up in knots and you need to use additional flags anyway.
Well, yeah, but those flags are only set once. They are not passed over a call chain. So that may be not a big difference, but.
I don't think so. If you look into how this was actually deployed, you will realize quite soon that it's not going to be set once. It's going to be dynamically changed.
So we'll get back to this conversation when the actual code is available, because I don't think so. But so let's just say we disagree on this right now, and then and try to do something, because I don't think so. The idea basically is that you will have to set those flags once at probe time, and then the core should do and the core and the middle layers should do the right thing with them. And this, by the way, it is not. So the flags that Linus objected about were about which state we are going into, and those flags are not about this. They are about this, something different.
Well, it's very similar.
But they could be used for this. Yeah, if we had if we had an additional argument, right, and it could have been used for this too, right?
And you pointed out that the driver doesn't know which pathway it's being called on.
So that you have a point. Yeah. Yes. But yeah. Okay. Right. So so that's all from me. So I guess Ulf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I use a little slides? I have a couple of slides.
Mine? Yeah. Yeah. Please feel free. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so this is actually not just about new stuff. It's a quick update of what has happened. So I'm just going to browse through it very quickly, and if you want to talk about it, we can do it in the hallways. All right, or if you can stop and ask. Oops. Can you see that? Yeah. Okay. Anyway. I just wanted to raise that this is about generic power domain, if you didn't got that from the beginning, which I'm co-maintaining with Raphael and Kevin. So it's I wanted to say that the community is increasing and the use of it is increasing, which is very nice. So since Fallout 8, we have 18 different authors contributing with changes, which is quite nice. So it's good. And a couple of highlights since last LPC is that we have added idle statistics in YenPD, so you can actually get information about how long you are staying in the different idle states of the domain. And we are planning to extract that information to present it in a good form in the Power Debug tool. And related to that is that we have realized that in the current runtime PM framework, we also have this time accounting, but we're using GIFIS, and we're planning on actually use KTime there instead to make these two consistent with each other. We have the IRQ safe domains, which it's quite a while ago, where we can now handle IRQ safe devices and IRQ safe domains in a correct manner. And that is also related to the other update I will have you, will give you about the cluster idling patch set. And we have added always on, support for always on PM domains. There were actually some support for this already, but it was wasn't really functional. So now we can use a more optimized execution path for these kind of domains. And moreover, we can also deal with system sleep error paths better than we could before. It's earlier we couldn't trust the error code we got from this YenPD power on-off callback. So this actually enables this. And the other big change is that we can now remove power domains, which is useful in probe failures or for other cases when you may need to remove PM domains. And there was a bunch of APIs got added because of that. I'm not going into the details. You will have to check that yourself. It's just to highlight and say it. There's some new stuff there that may be interesting for you. So ongoing stuff. There is a series posted by Buresh for adding performance state's knowledge in YAMPD. And yeah, there has been a lot of discussions on the mailing list around that, and I guess we are quite close to actually be able to merge it. And my only open things here is that there were some discussions about DT bindings for performance states, and I'm not sure if we should pick that up and discuss it again, or we just defer it to a later point. Yeah. And then the second thing is that I don't like to add like new APIs, which this change will do. And I want to make sure that this API is actually going to be used. So avoiding having dead code. So in a couple of years, we understand, no, this wasn't useful, so we will remove it again. So I wanted to make sure that we have real users for these APIs. But I guess that's just a matter of some more implementation. Is there anything you want to bring up there, Viresh, around this?
We would surely like to get the DT bindings again, but maybe after the current set is merged. And for the real users, yeah, we will have the Qualcomm support for it for sure in the first version itself.
Okay,
that's pretty much it. Yeah. I don't know if there are other platforms which port to use it apart from Qualcomm. Maybe we can discuss it at Linaro Connect, which will have more, you know, more of ARM guys who wants, but I don't know if Intel needs this kind of stuff right now. No, it's okay.
So it's ARM stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, we can talk to different manufacturers, different sort of people to see if any other person, any other like team needs it or not. But yeah, Qualcomm is surely there.
All right, thanks. So, and some other stuff that has been discussed on the mailing list is the multiple PM domains. A device can have multiple PM domains. So we had that discussion in PISA, I know, and it's been followed up on the mailing list, but it seems to have ended around in May. I'm not really sure where we are there.
Sorry about this, because I had a plan for a long time to actually respond to this. So the problem basically is not just multiple PM domains in terms of GenPD, because it is possible to be for a device to be in multiple PM domains because you can have a hierarchy, right? So this is possible. But the problem is that there are power resources of different types that we... in GenPD, they are sort of, so GenPD only represents, in fact, the power control. The clock control is sort of bolted into it from a side by calling the clock framework from callbacks, which the driver callbacks even, I think.
That may be the case.
It doesn't have to be like that. But in some cases, so it would be good to have a notion of a clock domain, actually. Somehow, you know, or maybe power resources, like,
so we
I
have,
don't know.
We so have been exploring that approach. I know that John and Vid from NVIDIA did some attempts on that.
Yeah.
But I think we kind of failed. It's completely separate rails that he wants to power on and off. So he needs a separate control mechanism of these different domains.
Right.
So it's more or less like let's consider it as a clock. He needs to be able to turn that clock on and that off, and vice versa.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not the clock. It's a power rail, it's a domain.
Yeah, so basically, you know, it's like this mostly is about power resources. It's like you have a resource that you have to reference count, right? And if the last reference is dropped, then you can turn it off, maybe. Something like that. And then it doesn't sort of fit into the GenPD framework, I think.
So the fit there is the runtime PM part, of course. So you want to just do the runtime PM, get them put in the driver.
Oh, that.
So it fits in that part.
Okay.
and it fits in from the.
Well, but then you have, there's only one reference counter in there, and you need multiple. You need a reference counter per power resource, essentially. So I'm not sure. But anyway, let's just talk about this.
Yeah.
You know, in how late. So, but yeah, we need to follow up on that.
Anybody else that want to comment on that? I know NVIDIA had a couple of use cases, and I know Qualcomm has a couple of use cases for this, but do we know about anybody else that has use cases for this? Okay. Yeah.
So I haven't followed the patches myself, but I'm guessing what you're trying to do is if a device goes idle, you want to be able to turn off two different power domains than just one of them, right? And it's not a hierarchy. Okay, yeah, that's pretty common. Thanks.
Okay, I think. Yeah, the other one is about just about minor thing that I have in my mind of modernizing wake-ups in YumPD, so it's just a heads up that I might post some patches for that. Let's move on. Yeah. So cluster idling patch set. It's been a while since there were a new version posted on the mailing list. Actually, it's since March. So obviously, we have had a little hiccup of progressing this. Anyway, I just wanted to give you a really quick recap of where we are and what to expect on the mailing lists. And if there's any questions about this, just stop. So more or less, we have found that there is a problem of dealing with clusters in a multi-cluster SoC and hierarchical complex system. And today, it more or less looks like this. There is no management of cluster and the coherency. It is typical an ARM SoC, but it may be for other. Yeah.
That's intended for platform PCI.
Absolutely, this is the PCI thing there that been added for ARM 64 helps with this, and it takes us from we have been discussing about that earlier. So PCI is a very useful, and it actually also enabled us to work on this in an easier way, so to say. So the conclusion we had is that we have a CPU idle framework which deals well with CPUs, but not the clusters. And there is also another problem that we have seen. And there is other shared resources, often on an ARM SoC, that the CPU idle subsystem doesn't take into account. And that could be like, caches, gigs, whatever. When those shared resources are used, that may mean that you cannot go into a low power state of the cluster. So there is no way to control this behavior today. That is why we wanted to solve it like this. So we have we quickly saw that YumPD has provides a couple of good things that could be used. First of all, it has the runtime PM support, and it also provides the ability of describing the topology of the SoC from a power management point of view. So more or less, we wanted to fold in CPUs in this picture. So we wanted to deploy runtime PM support for CPUs, and we wanted to describe the topology of the using the MPD, but for CPUs instead of just for generic devices. So in this picture, the generic PM domain needed to be a little bit extended to cover CPUs, and that work is done and completed. And there is two patch sets that's been posted in March. Part of that patches is dealing with the ARM 64 specific stuff, the platform driver here, which is the PCI adaptation that needs to be made. And the other series is deploying the runtime PM support for CPUs and adding the CPU PM domain. And already said. So we are working now on posting a new series of this in a couple of weeks. I wished I could have posted it before coming here to have a better discussion, but yeah, next time. Just some background information is that we have been doing a lot of latency measurements of the behavior of PCI. We have been working with ARM and in ARM trusted firmware for enabling what's needed for in the ARM trusted firmware for PCI. And we've also been doing a lot of power measurements, and we are adding more boards to the power management farm with Heaven, Linaro, Cambridge, to get good numbers out of this. So expect in a couple of weeks we should expect a new series, and we can continue discussions on mailing list, I think. That's probably easier than now, unless it's something specific that you want to bring up.
Right, is that the last line? So if you actually go for one more slide, so you're talking about using generic PM domain to kind of capture the cluster topology, kind of, right? So how, like, what's your thought on how you're going to handle having multiple PM domains per device, and that's combining with this?
So if we move back to the with the multiple domains per devices,
honestly, so for example, one cluster could be on two power domains. Right?
Yeah, that's an interesting.
But then how would you, like, then which of those generic PM domains is the cluster domain? It's a real problem, right?
Are you talking about CPUs or are you talking about devices in general?
No, I'm combination of both, because you do have generic PM domains here. If you add support for multiple PM domains per device,
yeah,
then the CPUs could be on two domains.
If that is possible, yes.
Very much.
Yeah.
So then which one would you consider, which one would you look at to consider the cluster topology?
So this falls back to the, this falls back to how we implement multiple domains per devices. I don't
so,
count,
so maybe
I
something,
can't
to,
that
something
yet.
To keep in mind, I guess.
Yeah.
Same problem for non-CPU devices.
Yeah.
But you're not trying to define the topology there, right? Like you don't, like you're not defining a cluster there. Right? Like you just, it's a PM domain, right?
Share domains that could be separate from each other. So I think it's not just CPUs where this problem, that shared problem happens. So we have to solve the multiple domains problem in general.
True, but for cluster idle, right? I think you're looking at the generic PM domain to figure out what is considered a cluster, like which four CPUs together would form a cluster, for example, right? But that you're looking at that, we're looking at, okay, all these four CPUs are part of this gen PM domain, right?
So if you have a case where four CPUs are part of a PM domain and that's how you identify a cluster, then if all those four CPUs are also on another power PM domain, how would you know which PM domain to use to identify which CPUs form a cluster?
I guess, but this is just a guess, that it would depend on the C state or idle state you want to get to, right? Because then the clock domain will be for, say, clock gating states, and the voltage domain will be for the deeper ones. That would be my understanding of this.
Yeah, I think we have to take it offline. But yeah, this is the next step, next evolution of this. So yeah,
I guess so. Right.
We have to start with something, and we're solving an existing problem.
Then
we have to move on.
So I think that this is the right path. I mean, to try to address simpler problems first, and then go ahead to the more complicated ones, and not the other way around, because then you never complete work essentially.
So on the multiple PM domains, one thing that might solve it is to break the interconnects into segments. So at least that's my take. So if I see something like that, I would first look at how the hardware is really wired. So if the whole interconnect is set up as a single PM domain, then that's probably wrong, and there's probably multiple partitions within that interconnect.
Anyway, more to talk about, right?
Yep, I'm done.
Okay, cool.
Yep, thank you.
So this was pretty much the last basically technical topic, and I have an update on some the maintenance practices and so on, so I guess I can use an empty slot for this. So just briefly, this is sort of a laundry list of sub-projects, I would say, that I more or less maintain within the power management infrastructure. So the PM core with a lot of goodies in it, generic PM domains, I apply patches for this. Ulf and Kevin are reviewers, so please, if you send patches in that, touching GenPD, then always CC them. Suspend resume core, the hibernation, ACPI device power management, and system suspend resume. CPU freak, and here, PCC vRash on everything. Also, Srinivas, if you try to modify Intel P state and schedule till, if you touch schedule till, and CC Peter. CPU idle, Daniel Etzkanel is covering the ARM part, and the IBM, I mean PowerPC people are taking care of themselves, essentially. And PMQOS, which hasn't been touched for a long time now. And there's the LPP framework, and again, Viresh and Steven Boyd are reviewers here, so this is... everything should go, should be CC'd to them. For the CPU idle, we have Intel idle, and Jacob is the maintainer, and Len Brown, who also sometimes responds to patches and proposals. So, yeah, that's what I do. Now, a couple of comments or remarks on what I do, how I handle things, and so on. So
Raphael,
so you know.
Did you forget about DevFreak?
DevFreak is maintained by the Samsung people.
It's not so doesn't come.
I only take pull requests from them.
Okay.
So you have to talk to them.
Okay.
So this is, I don't consider that as part of,
you know, so the previous slide is sort of related to this one, which is about my own maintenance practices, and that doesn't apply to the free, because I don't apply patches for the free. I use Patchwork. I use Patchwork, so it is for the Linux PM mailing list. So if you want me to pick up patches, please CC them to linux-pm@vjerkernel.org, because that makes them go into Patchwork automatically, and then I can create bundles and do things like that, so which I like. Also, Patchwork is nice because it collects tags for me, like reviewed by or act by, and so on. So please do that. Now, this means that I sort of use Patchwork as my own queue of things to do. So if you look at it, you may actually figure out what's the status of your patches. So the rule of thumb is that patches with visible status that you can see are not delegated to anyone, have not been looked at yet. So, and they will be because they are in the queue, right? So you don't have to remind me. Delegated patches are under consideration, which usually means that they are on the way upstream. Not always, but sometimes. That Linux-PM mailing list is used by not only by me, but also by Thermal, by the Thermal subsystem, and by the power supply subsystem. So there is some noise on it, but the things in Patchwork are mostly Thermal and my material. The Git tree is Linux-PM. I have multiple branches. The majority of branches are actually local in my development systems. I expose immutable branches upon request. So if you want to share material with somebody else and I applied your patches, you want the branch to be exposed, let me know and I will do that. I don't do that, you know, on a regular basis because I happen to rebase things. So sometimes, not very often. So yeah, so I can do that. There are three branches you probably should be interested in. There's Linux Next, and obviously this goes into the Linux Next tree. The way I create my Linux Next branch is by merging all of the local branches that I have. And they can be remerged very often, but this doesn't mean that the commits will change very often. It's just merges. There's a bleeding edge branch, and this, so Linux Next should be easy to should be ready to use, generally speaking. And so if you just want to test power management material scheduled for the next merge window, you can just pull from this branch and try it. Please do if you work on power management. The bleeding edge is bleeding edge. The purpose of it is to run a 0-day and see if it compiles. Mostly. So if you want to use it, then there's no guarantees and, you know, so on. So on your risk. The testing branch is something that goes into the internal Intel tree that is being tested on Intel hardware. So that is based on Linux Next most of the time, but sometimes there is new material in it, which is not in Linux Next yet, but considered for it. So this is Git tree. Now I have some rules, okay, about when to send patches. And so if you don't follow those, I don't get very upset, but this is like a request, please do that, because that makes my life easier. Thank you. So first of all, please post patches after RC1 and before RC7. If possible. The merge window, I don't like get patches during those. Fixes, yeah, send them anytime. Maybe delayed if that's late in the cycle, and I may decide that, well, this fix is not urgent enough to be pushed like for RC7.
maybe I will just delay to the merge window. I like changes to be based on top of the most recent RCs from Linux, not Linux Next in particular. But, and if you have to base them on Linux Next, then let me know what branches I should pull from what people for that. Now, yeah, if your patch is in patchwork, this means that it is in a queue and I will look at it. So you don't have to ping me in that case. But also please check awaiting upstream, which doesn't show by default. You have to use a filter. And if your patch is in the awaiting upstream list, then it means it's in my Linux Next branch. So yeah, double check if it's really there. In some cases, I may forget about things. But yeah, so these are my sort of rules. So again, they are not hard rules. If you don't follow them, you know, the sky is not going to fall. But if you do, I will be happier. Okay, so please do that. Okay, that's it. So if you have any comments or any questions regarding power management maintenance, please ask them. This is the right time.
Are we an hour and a half early? Are we an hour and a half early?
Actually, 10 minutes early. So we are right on time. Okay, so that's it. We
12:30, sorry, not 12:30.
Yeah, we have 10 minutes left. Okay, so a few last words from.
Oh, well, it's not really last words. It's only that. So last year, as you mentioned, we organized in Pisa in April timeframe this SPM summit. It's really a small things, only focus on solving problems. Developers, we're trying to organize again this year. The idea would be the 16, 18 of April, just because it's 2 weeks after Easter. So we didn't announce yet because we just thinking about it, but hopefully November timeframe we will probably send an announce. Just saying that if you think of that you are interested, then you have to do any plans not right now. It might be that week of April. That's it.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
So we are done. Thanks a lot, everybody, for participation. Appreciate seeing you here. Have a nice day.
Thank you.